You're listening to Pertil Engvist's message, In the World, part of the sermon series, Both And, at Eastbrook Church. We welcome you to join us for our weekend worship services on Saturdays at 5 p.m. and Sundays at 8, 9:30, and 11 a.m. For more information and additional resources, please visit eastbrook.org.
Invite up now Bertil Engvist, who's going to share the word with us from the book of Jonah. Come on up, Bertil.
Thank you. Well, thank you very much. And it's a marvelous church. I love you guys. I'm just telling you that. I said it yesterday when I came back here. We came back here. When did you come? Tuesday, huh? We really felt like we came home to you. And I want to tell that, and I really speak that from my heart as well. And we think about you throughout the year. Now, to talk about Jonah, I love it. And I just hope that you like to listen. You don't have to love it. At least you could like it. And my problem is this too, that I would like to use all these sessions that we have. I really could go on too long. I'm good at that. And that's one of my gifts. My other gift is, of course, that of interruption. And then I have this one of parentheses, whatever you say in plural. You know, that I start off with something like just did it now. And then I keep on something else and, you know, people get lost. Now, you get a good book from library and read in the meantime. And anyway, we look at Jonah. And I started the introduction with my thinking about the book in trying to explain a little bit about who was Jonah as a person. And we discover, if we look back in the Old Testament, we find that Jonah was a very popular person, actually. He was popular, that is, in his home area, because it was the days when there was an expansion of Israel, and he was actually working together with the king. And I think that was a little sort of nepotism almost, not really like that, but it's something else it's called. Because he, as probably, according to the Jewish traditions, he was the one who anointed a former king, actually the great-grandfather of Jeroboam II. Isn't it interesting with all these names? Do you love names? He worked under a king called Jeroboam II, and that was because there had been a king called Jeroboam I. Okay, that's simple. But then, you see, his father had a father who had a father, and that man was called Jehu. And we talk about running like a Jehu, I think. Do you say that in stage two? You don't do that. Who are you running like? Michael Jordan. Okay, anyway. But the thing is this, you know, that it means that somebody's moved very fast because he went with horse. And boy, this is very difficult. I will come back to Jonah very soon. But what I mean is this, you know, up there those days there was a prophet, and the prophet should anoint that man to king, but he didn't do that. He actually sent a young man instead who also was a prophet. They had schools of prophets in those days. And he went down there to anoint the king, and what the Jewish tradition says, that was Jonah. So Jonah was connected with the king. That's my point, okay? He was connected with Jeroboam II, who was a very, very bad king. He did what was evil, probably one of the worst kings as far as moral and God is concerned, but as far as expansion of the kingdom of Israel, he was one of the best. He was actually one of the favorites. They expanded more than ever before. They become rich and they had a good time, but the moral went down the drain, or whatever you say. Okay, anyway, you know what I mean. So here is Jonah, and he had that good position together with the king, and God calls him, and I call these days, I say, a man on the go. That's Jonah. He was active. He was very active with the king, in the household of the king. But now God spoke to him, and that was no surprise, because God speaks to prophets and through prophets. So he shouldn't be surprised, but this time he didn't like the message, because God said to Jonah, arise and go to Nineveh. Now, Nineveh was the Assyrian area up northeast of Israel. And that was their only problematic situation. They had political problems in those days also, as we have. But anyway, they were afraid. If we think in terms like that, it was a sort of a Saddam Hussein regime up there, or ISIS, if you like that. They were up there. And they had horrific punishments. And I said to you who were here last time, actually, one of the worst ones was that they were flaying people. They were peeling skin off the people that they didn't like. And that's not nice at all. So the thing is this, that Jonah, I said three things last time, and I'm repeating that for you who are new here. It is, first of all, he was in a tremendous career. And in that career that was successful, God calls him to do something that actually was totally different from what he would like to do. He would like to stay put, and he did not want a second career, particularly going up to Ninevites and tell them that God was going to destroy, well, maybe he liked that part actually, that God was going to destroy their nation in 40 days. But he didn't want to go there. And the other reason for that was also that he had a theology that really God was only for his people. It was a God of Israel. And why should he go to the Gentiles? That was his problem. The third thing was this, that he was afraid. And that one we understand when I told about the punishment that they could get if they got caught out there. So these are three areas where we also are facing. If God would call us to break up in our career, go into some, do something new, and do something that might even be very dangerous for us, we also would think a second time. Now, he stood up and he went. Immediately, he reacted, but he when this man on the go, he went the other direction. Actually, he went a total opposite direction from where he should go. And he went down to get a ship. And on board that ship that he found, because he also says he was looking for a ship. Am I speaking too quick? This is my only way to come to my first point. Actually, my sermons are pointless. But anyway. but so he goes down, you know, and he finds this ship. And then he pays the money because he probably got quite a bit of money working together with the king. That was his sort of a fellowship that he was used to. And then he goes down, get this ship, go into Tarsus, and he goes down into the ship, hides and sleeps. And the boat sails off and the wind comes. And actually, I must confess, today when I meditate on this, I thought of these 60 million refugees we have in Europe going in these rubber boats across, you know, from Turkey to Greece or from Libya up to Italy, where actually thousands and thousands are dying in the water. So if we just keep that in mind as well and remember that, what did Jonah do in this case? He got on board the boat and God sent a wind there that start really to actually the boat came to the point of breaking apart. We read in that chapter. But Jonah goes down and sleep in the bottom of the ship. He goes down there and there he hides. And the crew, in this case, they had a crew. In the crew, they got very desperate. They prayed to all the different gods. And eventually, they found Jonah down there hiding. And so they woke him up and said, you know, come up and pray to your God as well. And that's very interesting. Because they said like this, you know, they want to find out whose fault it is. And when I thought of that one today, I thought like this, you know, we can look at the world today and we see these horrendous things that are going on, if it is in the Middle East or downtown here at Milwaukee, where you also have problems, you know, still some of us can go down there and hide somewhere and sleep. As it is not going on. And we wish, you know, in some ways that we had a little remote control for the world and we could change the channel, you know, and say, well, now it's something good instead and some nice and we want entertainment instead of what the reality that we have out there. Now, Jonah didn't have such a remote and nor do we. The world is actually suffering quite poorly, badly out there. And instead of sleeping, we should be awake and alert and see what we can do about the situation. Jonah was waken up by those men that probably didn't fear God because they prayed to other gods. And they challenged him to pray also to the living God. And it's an interesting little detail. They say, who are you? What are you doing here? And all these things. Then he says, you know, I'm a servant of the living God who creates the land and the sea. You know, and they got, wow, this is the guy who created, he believes in the God who created the sea. And here we are in trouble. So, you know, they say, what shall we do? And so on. And he says, throw me in the water. Okay, and they throw him over in the water, and there a big dag, it says in Hebrew. It's a creature, it's a fish, it's a creature with Normally we say it's a whale. I don't know if it was a whale. If it was a whale, doesn't matter really. It was a big thing in the water that God sent there to pick him up. And that was his residence for 3 days. Jesus talks about Jonah. And you know, this thing with the fish bothers us so much. And we say like this, you know, this shows that it's just a story. But you know, that actually has happened, that people have been swallowed by fish, even lived 3 days and been surviving that as well. Now, when it goes into the fish, he gets into a desperate situation. I think that would be quite desperate too. You know, once again, he's in the bottom, now in the bottom of the sea. And when he is there, it says for 3 days and three nights, now he calls to God. And it's very interesting to hear some things that he's saying. First of all, you know, he says like this, you know, from inside the whale or whatever then, ill fish. He says like this when he calls out, you know, I go to verse 3. You hurled me into the deep. And I thought that this is typical, you know, this is typical us. You know, why doesn't God do anything about it? Here he is and tells the guys, you know, he's running away from God. He's disobedient. He goes on this ship and the ship is sort of collapsing. And the guys, by the way, for you who were not here last time, actually, it's in the Bible, so it doesn't matter when you were here. But the guys on the ship, the crew, they came to faith in Yahweh, in God, and they started to worship him when they saw that the water got calm as soon as they threw Jonah into the water. Now, don't try that, you know, with one another. But anyway, he got into the water, and he is the one who said they should do that. And then he says in his prayer, after he sort of tried to start, it's the time to reflect, you know, when you're in, we can say in this case, deep trouble, can't we say that? He's in deep trouble. And then we start praying. But he does something very, not so nice, whatever, how he expressed that. But he says like that, you hurl me into the deep, into the very heart of the seas. And he says, your waves and breakers swept over me. It is like, you know, come on, God, you know, it's your fault. You're doing this. How did I end up in this mess? Why do you let me come into this mess? You know, I recognize myself in that so much. You know, how did I get into this mess? Lord, you put me in this mess. And there he is under the water. And actually, it's very interesting to compare with Psalm 139, if you like to read that one. Not now, but sometime. It is that, you know, he is in the water there, and yet he knew very well, where can we flee from your spirit? He was on his run from God. And God actually didn't pick him up, he picked him down, if I can say that, in the fish belly. But he's repenting. And when he's repenting or worshiping God down there, it would be nice to have that beautiful choir, big fish. But anyway, no, to have you singing down there. And he says like this, in the bottom of the sea, in the stomach of the fish, that seems to be a good place of contemplation and coming to reality in one's worldview. There he realizes that the one who seek and worship idols, it says in verse 8, or cling to them, they do that in vain. And they lose out of the grace of God. It's a very interesting expression. That's they losing out these things. And then he says this thing in verse 9. What I have vowed, I will make good. Salvation comes from the Lord. And it seems like God was waiting for Jonah to finally repent from his rebellion. And now when he says these words, then God speaks to the fish. It's interesting, he doesn't speak to Jonah anymore. Now he speaks to fish instead. And he says to this great creature, say, okay, let him out. And he spit him out of the mouth on the beach. Now, there is another problem here. I said that one of the worst punishments that they could have in Nineveh, as far as I can see, it was that they ripped off the skin of living beings. Now, when in reality now people have been caught by fish or eaten by fish, if you like to call it that, they have been in their stomach and rescued. You know what happened to the skin? It gets destroyed by the acid. And I can sort of imagine, you know, on the beach, by the way, in Algeria, of all places, in Algeria, they have a bay, which is called Jonah's Bay, in Algeria, North Africa. I don't know, but they say traditionally that is where Jonah ended up. I've never gone with a ship, a fish, 3 days and 3 nights. I don't know how far you get, but they are convinced it was over there. And it doesn't matter if it was there or if it was in the Middle East. But Jonah now being spewed out, because that's what it says, he was spewed out on the beach, coming out from the fish, probably quite pale by now. And his skin totally destroyed. Now, if I've been living in the Middle East about 25 years, and you can hardly do anything without being noticed. You know, even in the desert, driving through the desert, the Sahara, or if you drive through the desert in Saudi Arabia, you stop there because of necessity sometimes. If you are in the desert, you might have to stop. Necessity, by that I meant to take a sandwich to eat, of course. But anyway, or something else. But when you stop there, you see, oh, there's nobody here. You thought, suddenly, boop, pops up a Bedouin there, boop, another Bedouin there, like they're growing there all over the desert. You know, so you are not alone. And the interesting thing is that's the way how the word spread in those days and in these days. Red Sea Mission Team, have you ever heard of that? Good. Then I will say something about it. They had a leader, or a man called Doc, we call him. He's from Canada. Wonderful man. He was doctor, so we just call him Doc. He was traveling in Somalia, along the coast in Somalia, on camels. That's what they do. That was their way of transporting. And they were preaching the gospel, and they were giving out gospel, and he was a medical doctor and helped people. And he drove, or whatever you do, rode, I guess, on his camel into next village. And what he discovered was that whenever he came to a new village, people were waiting for him already, both to hear the gospel as well as getting help. And whenever he did that, then he discovered that they had a quicker system beside. They were running ahead of him with messengers telling that Doc is coming and you can get help or you have a funny story or something like that. And that's what I think also happened here. So when Jonah is spewed out, you know, out of the mouth of the fish, this is speculation, by the way, it's not a Bible study. Excuse me, Matt. I'm trying to explain how things work. So when he is spewed out there, if it was in the Middle East or in North Africa, I bet there were some kids playing on the beach, collecting shells or whatever they did, or there were some other people, there were a village because there were a lot of fishermen along here. And here comes the fish. Can you imagine that drive up on the shore and then, you know, and out comes a Jonah. Can you imagine that? Do you think that will go unnoticed? No, it's not. It won't. And what will this say? A man comes and he looks like he's been dead. That's interesting, you see. So here he comes out, all destroyed in one way, and he has a long walk. If it was North Africa, it was a very long walk. And I'm glad the Bible doesn't tell us how long he was walking, how long time it took for him to get to Nineveh. If it was in the Middle East, like he had two graves, as I said yesterday, one was in Tyre in Lebanon, so maybe he got off there. I don't know where the station were for this fish. But anyway, the thing is wherever he got off, I can promise you one thing, that people will run ahead of him and they will tell that this guy is coming. This is, by the way, when we evangelize, we call this gossiping the gospel. We get people interested, so they talk about this guy. You know, they're preaching the gospel. That's one of the best methods you ever can do with the gospel. You get people interested without actually going to them. They come and ask for you instead if they can have a New Testament or if you can tell them about the gospel. And I will soon get into that. You help me with the thing. He's very good at helping me in the end. I mean, that's to tell me to shut up. Okay. So here, you know, Jonah, just try to imagine that. Jonah is walking along. Small kids might be running ahead of him. You remember that story of the prophet, don't you know? Bold head. You remember that one? That was a terrible story. But anyway, it's a true story also in the Bible. But here Jonah comes, and I think people are terrified, especially because in this area, the Philistine and all the way up to Assyria, they had one of the gods they had. It was Dagon. Dagon was a god that was half fish, half man. It was one of the bigger gods they have. And here is this guy coming out of the fish, walking up and looking like he's dead. And you know, the rumors go ahead, something is happening here. So when he comes out, there is some kind of contextualization for him when he finally reaches up to Nineveh. because they will already almost be expecting him. It's very interesting. Now, I will do what I do sometimes. How many of you are planning to come tomorrow? Can I see a few hands? The pastor is planning to come. Good. Okay, I'm just wondering why I should go ahead. Because it's so exciting, this thing. The thing is this, you see, that Jonah now, he goes in, and it takes, once he's in the city, it takes 3 days, it says, to come in there for him to get into the city there. And the city, by the way, we read from Genesis, is probably 3 or 4 cities together. So it's not only Nineveh, it's a little sort of a bus stop, but it's actually the whole area. And that's where much people there, and there's also, you know, a large area. So it takes time for him to go there. And especially if you're going to preach everywhere, you know, in 40 days, God is going to destroy this place, you know. Very popular message to come into a town, you know. So here it starts, this white thing that you say, oh boy, you know, he came out of the fish. And they know that the fish god in the past fell down, you know. Once it fell down when it was close to the ark of the Lord. And they put it up again and it fell down and broke, both head went off. You know, and the arms too. But anyway, the thing is this, they knew about this Dagon as a god. And here he comes up into the city and they say, here's the man who was dead. He's alive. He comes into them and he says, you know, in 40 days, your city will be destroyed. And I think it will take a little bit of crowd. They gather a few people there. Then it goes on again. So even if it would be in a smaller place, you know, it's not strange if it takes 3 days. He might even stop, eat and drink and whatever else also. Now the problem for Jonah, as we realized and as we remember, it was that Jonah actually didn't want the Ninevites to believe in God. His purpose was destruction. This was their major enemies. And actually, by the way, he's quite a character. I said that before. You know, he's very suicidal, you know, and we'll see that in the chapters as we go along here. But also another thing is this, he seems to be very grumpy. You know, all about what we read about his life, the only time he was happy, it was when a little bush grew up. Then he said, and Jonah was happy. Actually, exceedingly happy. You know, otherwise he's thinking about something totally different. Okay, here he is, you know, and he is preaching against the city. How is the city reacting? They start to fast and pray. They're taking sackcloth on, which is a way of they showing that. And even the word goes to the king, and the king makes a decree for the whole nation that everybody should be fasting and praying to God. And I found that very interesting. It's not Jonah that says it. This is the decree of the king and his nobles. Do not let any man or beast, herd or flock, taste anything. Do not let them eat or drink, but let man and beast be covered with sackcloth. Let everyone call urgently on God. Let them give up their evil ways and their violence. Who knows? God may yet relent with compassion turn from his fierce anger so that we will not perish. That's a decree from the king, not from Jonah. And the people do repent. The people do stop up. And when God sees that, he relents. And he does not do the things that he intended to do because of their wickedness. And I did say, by the way, last time I spoke on this, Israel at this time were very wicked. But Jonah didn't rebuke them. But here he is rebuking, and to his great anger, they repented. And it says like this, you know, Jonah was greatly displeased and became angry. He prayed to the Lord again, a little different prayer this time. Oh Lord, is this not what I said when I was still at home? That is why I was so quick to flee to Tarshish. And then he quotes Joel, 2nd chapter actually here. I know that you are gracious and compassionate God, slow to anger and abounding in love, a God who relents from sending calamities. This is why I didn't go, because I knew that if they heard that they sinned against you, they would repent. Now, we sang here, you know, who will go? Who will go? Holy Ghost wants us to go there. And I want just to conclude them with three thoughts today. And I have permission to continue in with different sermons tomorrow, right? So you're welcome to come then too, if you want to. Where are we hiding, my friends? Where is the place where we're hiding from the realities? Because I feel that inside me and inside you, sometimes we're building up, may I call it like a shelter, or like a ship, if you like, or like a fish maybe. But we're building up something where we're hiding away from the brutal reality that is out there to which we could actually make a difference. And I just want us to think about that. How do I am reacting to the things around us? Or that face, by the way, that we see them. Do we also hide from that and switch the channel to somewhere else just to get our mind off the horrors that others go through? Prayer, and I appreciate Eastbrook here because he had much emphasis on prayer, but prayer can be such also that it's only when we get desperate and we do not get on with what we want to do, or something happened to us that is difficult, then we go to God and pray. And we're expecting Him to hear us, and God does hear us. But wouldn't it be wonderful if we, before we get into the trouble, learn to pray and ask God to move in and through our lives? I think so myself anyway. But maybe the greatest thing of all this far in the book, it is that actually God spoke to Jonah once again. In spite of his failure, in spite of the fact that he was running in the wrong direction, in spite of the fact that he probably put his career and fear before the command of God, God still spoke to him. Because God is a God of a second chance. And that's for me, and that's for you as well. Whatever God has spoken to us over in the past, you know, He will give us a chance again. God does not give up on us. The God who didn't give up on Nineveh, He does not give up on us. But He will speak to us again and say, okay, come on, let's move on from here. So who will go to the Ninevites? Who will go to those in this mission conference we talk about, the unreached peoples? Who will go? Well, the one who knows the Holy Ghost will go. Maybe through prayer, maybe through giving, maybe not physically. But we must do something about it, not change the channel anymore. I give you just a little advertisement for the meeting tomorrow. It's very interesting. Have you ever thought of this text in Matthew chapter 16? Where Jesus asked, who do people say I am? They're telling then about, you know, who they think is a prophet or something like that. Jeremiah or one of the prophets. But then he turns to the disciples and says, well, who do you say I am? You are the Christ, the Son of the living God. And what does Jesus say then? Do you know that? Anyone?
My Father revealed that to me.
Well, he says something first. Blessed are you. Who? Simon. Huh? Son of Jonah. And that's where I want to take us on for. Why does Jesus call Peter son of Jonah, when his father's name was not Jonah? So that's for tomorrow. God bless you. Thank you.